And we have a guest, Dan Ashley from, oops, wait. I didn't turn that on.
Oh, there we go. Hey, Sarah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you on this rainy Wednesday.
Yeah, I know. How's the traffic? Bad?
A little slow, but it's fine. A little slow coming down, but nice to be here at Stanford.
Yeah. Well, it's so wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so
much. I see you in person because you're in my living room every night. So
now I'm in your radio studio. You're so kind.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. So, yeah, you'll have to tell me how KZSU compares to ABC7.
Oh, you know, it's a broadcast facility like any other. I think it's terrific what you guys are doing down there.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Well, we're not paid, let me tell you.
No, I can imagine. And I know, you know, you have to do everything yourself. And I remember doing a lot of that, too, when I was starting out as well. And I did some college radio.
Oh, did you?
Worked at WCHL in my hometown of Chapel Hill, CHL, Chapel Hill Radio.
Uh-huh.
It's where Jim Lampley, the great sportscaster, got his start.
Oh, wow.
One claim to fame. Yeah, I worked at CHL and also at the TV station that I worked for in Raleigh-Durham. But Chapel Hill, this small college radio station, was a commercial station too, actually.
Oh,
but, but anyway, I remember the first thing I covered was a presidential debate for them. And I had no idea what I was doing and trying to figure out the equipment. And there was nobody there like here. You know, I'm on my own.
Right.
There's literally nobody else at the station. And I'm trying to figure out how to edit sound bites. And
You're the engineer. You're the coffee maker.
Reporter.
Yeah.
You know, it was great fun, but it was nerve wracking.
Sure.
But I learned a lot.
Yeah. It ends up being fun. For me, the first 10 years, I was just so nervous.
Really?
It took me up to year 11 till I wasn't panicking every time.
You know, I remember years. I was nervous for a while, too, when I went on the air on television. And I used to produce the newscasts I anchored, which meant I wrote every story, selected the stories, organized the newscast. And I did that for about 3 years. And I love that process. And I love writing. And then I was always dreading going on the air because I was nervous. I made mistakes. Then you get more nervous. You make more mistakes. And it took, probably about a year or two, and then I began to settle down and wasn't nervous. But I remember those days well. when I was very anxious about doing, because you're trying so hard to do a good job. Perfect.
And it's worse for you because everyone can see you. For me, they can't see me.
That is true. Like they say, the camera never blinks. They're just staring right at me.
That's right.
And I remember one time my father was in the studio in those early days. My mom and dad came to visit. And Dad was always nervous. He didn't know anything about television. When I would call him at 2 in the afternoon, and I'm not on until 6, we were on the phone for 30 seconds. Hey, look, I know you're busy. You got to go. I'll let you go. I'm like, got plenty of time. But he was in the studio watching, and we got to the end of the newscast that I was anchoring at night. I said, that's our report. Good night. And he looked at my mom and said, is it over? And she said, he goes, yes. And he goes, thank God. He was so nervous the whole time.
Well,
now
so
I used
nice.
To. Now I call him occasionally. My mother passed away several years ago, but my.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I call Dad every now and then just to mess with him, like at a minute or two before I go on the air. Hey, just calling to say hi. Can you stop that? He hangs up on me. It makes him too nervous still.
That's so funny. Well, but you actually have a degree in communications. I mean, you're actually a professional.
Well, that's what they tell me. My joke is always, I want to do it. At work, I want to do it like a professional. I'm not saying I am a professional. I just want to do it like a professional. But, I graduated from University of North Carolina, communications major and English major as well. And I didn't minor in journalism because I started taking those courses later, but I also had a lot of journalism courses. But you learn that so effectively on the job, too.
Yeah, that's true. I majored in math. To show you how effective my...
Wow. Listen, if I'd majored in math, Sarah, I'd still be at the University of North Carolina trying to graduate. I promise. That's not even a joke. So good for you.
So, but you're in a band. So when did you start playing music?
I've been around music my whole life. My sister is a violinist and pianist and church organist, not anymore, but she did that for years. My mother always was insistent that we be exposed to music. She was into classical music, so we got exposed to Jean-Pierre Rampal, Eugene Fodor, Itzhak Perlman, so many great artists. And so I was around it my whole life. I never really participated in it. I had lessons in about everything you could you could try, Sarah. But, you know, I was more interested in sports and playing and other things. So I you know, I did it because I was sort of not forced to do it. But, you know, they wanted me to have some exposure to music. I didn't really discover it in a new way until about 15 years ago and started really focusing on being a vocalist and taking singing lessons and really working on my technique and ability. And sort of one thing led to another, and I ended up playing professionally and performing, you know, around town and sometimes out of town. So it really was kind of a happy accident. And, you know, I'm so very fortunate to have the help of my dear friend and truly amazing manager, Linda Yelnick, who handles my musical endeavors so ably, and she's a big believer, and I'm terribly grateful to her because she's helped me accelerate it and take it to new places as well.
Yeah, she's a very experienced manager.
Oh yeah, she's been around for many years doing that, and I'm just glad that she took me on.
And I've had other people too that she's managed on my show over the years.
Oh, you have, really? Yeah. You know, she loves it. Mm-hmm. She's very good at it, and she loves music, and so she's been, and she's just a dear friend. She's been incredibly helpful to me, and, you know, we have big plans to conquer the world, of course.
Oh, great, great.
And my wonderful collaborator that I write a lot of music with, Bill Bentley, is my guitarist as well in our band, but he also has elevated what we do in just a significant way. He's a tremendously talented artist, and I'm surrounded by remarkable musicians, I have to say. Billy Johnson on drums, he toured with Santana and many other people. James Henry on percussion, who's played with so many people, master percussionist. Angeline Saris on bass, and Dan Parenti also on bass, plays with us. All these guys are just remarkable players, professional musicians, so it's just terrific.
Well, that's great. Okay, you have your CD with you, so let's hear one of the cuts from
you're very CD. Kind, Sarah. This is the album is called Out There that we released about a year and a half ago. It did a little business on the charts during the pandemic and charted here and there. And Out There refers to my lifelong fascination with the universe and cosmology and the study of what makes the universe tick. I would love to do that for a living, but I don't have the math skills, Sarah. Well, I could not do it.
I kind of would too, because I want to know, well, what is dark matter?
Yeah, what is dark matter?
It's like 80% of the universe, and like we don't fully understand.
Yeah. It's just utterly fascinating.
It is.
And so I've always been fascinated. I used to lie in my driveway and stare at, as I say in the song Out There, I stare at the sky and I wonder why, you know. Uh-huh. And I used to do that as a kid. So anyway, this is the album Out There. The song I'd love for you to play is Redbud Road, which I mentioned, Chapel Hill, my hometown. I grew up on Redbud Road, so I wrote a song about that. And it's about everyone's childhood in a lot of ways, experiences I think we can all relate to.
Okay, let's hear it. Redbud Road.
Tall corn rows,
Okay. We're back.
Red Bud Road. Thank you for playing.
Well, yeah.
It's near and dear.
Well, thanks for writing it. So, what brought you out to California from Chapel Hill?
You know, that's a great question, because I was working at the time in Charleston, South Carolina, and a place that I just loved. It's just a lovely community. I worked at Raleigh-Durham in television, and then got a job in Charleston, South Carolina, and that was in 1987. And in 1994, so it was about time to, what are the next steps in my career? They offered me another contract to stay on as the main anchor. I was the main evening anchor by the time I left for the last 5 years of my 9 years there, almost 9 years. And I knew it was time to advance and see what else I might be able to do and to accomplish. And Hurricane Hugo hit Charleston, South Carolina in 1989 with devastating consequences. I covered that. I was the last broadcaster on the air and the first one back on a couple hours later when we got power back. I was broadcasting, you'll appreciate this, from underneath the 2,000-foot transmitter tower. Wow. That was about 17 miles from the TV station, because we knew the TV station would get wiped out, which it did. And it was a crazy, foolish place to be, really. But, you know, I was 26, I think. And you know, imagine being under a 2,000-foot tower and 150-mile-an-hour winds. One of the towers belonging to another station about half a mile away collapsed. Mm. No, they were not dumb enough to have anybody in there. But we had about 7, 8, 9 of us in that building underneath the tower. I truly did not think we would survive.
Wow.
The whole night I thought, we're not going to be here tomorrow.
Wow.
We'd get killed doing
really?
This. But you know, we did our jobs, and I was terrified off the air, very calm on the air. So at least I did that. But San Francisco sent relief, Red Cross relief, to Charleston after the hurricane. Mm-hmm. 3.5 weeks later or so, the earthquake hit here.
Oh, right.
And Charleston reciprocated and sent relief supplies
and
aid and people here.
Mm-hmm.
I followed that story out here. I'd never been to the Bay Area.
Oh.
I worked out of, coincidentally, KGO-TV. I was on the third floor working out of, they gave me the Canadian TV suite, which at the time Canadian TV had a bureau here. I worked out of there, went down to the newsroom and got video or whatever we needed. They were very kind to outside visitors. And like I said, I'd never been here. And even though it was a strange time, I thought, gosh, what a beautiful, interesting, vibrant, and diverse place. It made a real impression on me. And it was a strange month. I mean, natural disasters on both coasts I'm covering. And I was here the day after the earthquake or so, and standing in the marina and looking at all that damage. And I thought, gosh, what a neat place. About a couple of years after that, the guy that represents me in television said, what would you like to do? And I said, you know, I would love, this was in 92, said, I would love to work at a place like KGO in San Francisco. Just because of that impression.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we never spoke about it again until late 94, a couple years later. And he said, or early 95, late 94, I guess. And he said, remember you told me you wanted to work for KGO TV? And I said, yes. He goes, you're up for the 5 o'clock anchor job.
Whoa.
Really? He had remembered and he had pursued
nice.
That for me. And I had a number of other opportunities. I was very fortunate. The chance to go to New York and work at WNBC as a weekend anchor, Chicago, mm-hmm. boy, Pittsburgh, Houston, Dallas. And I was in a really fortunate position of a lot of opportunity, which was very exciting, and I was deeply humbled by, but this was the place that I most wanted to come.
Well, great. You know, so. Well, we have the best weather.
We have great
We're
weather.
We're very fortunate.
No,
yeah.
I was. If this one hadn't happened, I was going to take the job in Chicago, actually.
And they have the worst weather.
Oh, and I think that weather terrifies me, but I would have done it. But I'm so thankful that it worked out here, and I've been here nearly 30 years, so it was very grateful for that, Sarah.
Yeah, well, we're grateful having you. It's so great to watch you every night.
Oh, thank you very much. You're kind. I appreciate it. It's been a long time.
Yeah, yeah. So now I've totally forgotten
what
I was going
to ask
you.
Well, you know, we were talking about, you wanted to talk about how we make decisions about what we put on the air.
Yes, that is a question that I always have. Like, for one question is, of course, you're on at 5 and you're on at
6 and 11.
And then at 11. Yeah. So, yeah, are you giving the same... Or are you updating it with new information?
You know, it's a great question. You know, we are always updating. And, you know, we want the 11 o'clock news to have fresh material that you didn't see. Mm-hmm. And often there are news events that happen at night.
Sure.
Public meetings, rallies, breaking news, things develop. So we want to keep it fresh and keep you up to date so that you can you know, really feel that you're getting a comprehensive report on everything that's going on as it happens, or, you know, during that time period when it happens. But of course, the news of the day is the news of the day as well. So if there's a significant story at 5 and 6 or early, it will be reflected or covered in the 11 o'clock news when we can do what we call advancing it, find a new aspect of the story, a new angle in the story. We will, so that it updates it and freshens that story. And we always want to be pushing for more and new information, because that's what we're supposed to do and people expect us to do. So you'll see the stories you might see at 5 and 6. You'll see them in some form, maybe shorter, maybe longer. But we'll try to bring some new information to them. But we also are always looking for what's happening now. You know, that's the one unique thing. You know, I'm a big newspaper person. I read the New York Times every day, and other local papers. No longer, except the Sunday Times comes to my house in print form, but now it's all online, which is such a different experience, obviously. I love holding the paper. But and we used to have those in our newsroom, a rack like the library with all the papers every day. No more. It's all online. We don't get them anymore that way. You know, but the interesting thing about the newspaper, which I love, but the challenge is by the time you pick it up and read it in the morning, this was what happened yesterday.
Right.
You know, when you tune in at 5, 6, and 11, we can bring you what happened five minutes ago, or it's happening as we speak. So that's one of the challenges, I think, of this information age that is so quick and people expect it instantly. That's one of the challenges newspapers have had. Although, that said, it's one of the advantages now of going online with their content.
Well, that's right.
Because
they can update it right
now.
It's happening.
Yeah. But people expect, if we don't have the very latest information on particularly a major story, we know, why would you stay? You'll click over and see what somebody else has.
Well, that's why it was another question I was going to ask, too, because you're competing with all the other stations as well.
You know, it's a competitive industry, and that makes it fun for us, stressful for us, but it also makes it good for the community, because we are all, it's sort of policing itself in that respect. We're all pushing each other to advance the ball, get the latest information, ask the toughest questions, the newest questions, get you the freshest information we possibly can.
But, you know, and a lot of times I see very similar stories happening on ABC that I see happening on CBS. And how does that happen?
Well, you know, we are all looking for ways to differentiate our newscasts. I want you, like the stories I do personally, I want them to be stories you don't see anyplace else, because I want viewers who like watching us or like the stories that I report to see something they don't see anywhere else. But as we said, the news of the day is often the news of the day.
Sure,
we can't keep, they can't keep us from doing a story. We can't keep them from doing a story. So if something big happens,
everyone's going to cover
Everyone's going to just cover it. But we are all looking for exclusive stories and exclusive information so that our newscasts are distinctive and unique.
Right. You know, I did college radio when I was in college. I did a news broadcast for three minutes at the top of every hour for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And behind me was one of those tick, 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 tick coming off. We had an AP machine and a UPI machine.
One of my jobs was to rip the API and the UPI wire and hang it up. Remember how you put it on pegs?
Exactly.
Like national news, local news, international news.
And we got, at our college, we got CBS sending us sound bites every couple of hours that I would have to record for everybody.
Right.
And I'd put it on a cart. Remember those carts?
I remember the cart, the magnetized cart eraser that we would erase the carts with?
Oh, bulking. Yeah,
bulking.
We would bulk.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. And we still did that. I've been here for, I guess, 25 years, but before that I did a couple of years at the Foothill College Station, they still had a bulker there.
Yeah, well, you and I are same generation.
Yeah.
So I remember all of those. I used to work, you know, we used to shoot news on 3/4-inch tape, those big cartridges, and we had a 1-inch machine in Charleston to dub things sometimes. And then it became Beta and M2 and all these different formats. And now everything we shoot is on what we call a video card.
Sure.
It's just digital. It's just a little card you plug in.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more tape. I can't even play a tape of mine that I might have saved from years ago at the station. There are no machines left.
Oh, we do have that. That's that. That is, see, those two little tape things?
Oh, yeah, you sure do.
We still can play tapes.
Yeah, we don't.
We have LPs.
You have turntables,
I see,
for you.
We can do it all.
But it's been fascinating to watch how the technology has changed.
I know,
in our industry, meaning radio and television, And it has done so many wonderful things for us. And it's also been a detriment in other ways, I think. I mean, it's challenged us in new ways. But I think we are so much more flexible now in what we can do. You know, we used to have to send out a satellite truck or even a microwave truck. And now we have these units where we can go live with cell phone technology.
Yeah, and, it's amazing.
You know, it's remarkable how it's changed.
Mm-hmm. And, well, let's play another song from your
CD. Oh, sure.
Let's
see. What do we want to play? Why don't we play, you know what might be a good one? Why don't we play the fourth track, which is What Really Matters. I can tell you why I wrote that.
Okay.
Yeah, this song, sir, you're very kind. This song is called What Really Matters. Every Friday for years, actually I started it in 1998, after two or three years, suspended it for a while, didn't do it, and then brought it back many years ago. What Really Matters commentary at the end of the evening newscast.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
You've heard that probably at 6 o'clock, and it's how I end the week. And it's not a political editorial kind of thing. It's a commentary. It's a perspective on some of the news of the day, just my take on it or particularly one thing that's going on. And, you know, it's not political in any way, but it maybe is food for thought. So I wrote a song called What Really Matters because it's about I've been very fortunate in my career to have seen some remarkable things and had some amazing experiences. Whether it's traveling to Poland and touring Auschwitz with the Holocaust survivors or, you know, the terrible tragedy at Columbine, being there, going to Peru to report on El Nino and talking with children in a little fishing village. All these memories that have stayed with me. And in all of these stories, Sarah, every one of them, the good always rises to the top, even the tragic things. You know, people, my impression when I was at Auschwitz was, it, you know, it's just a terrible place. But I had, there was a, and I'm an optimist by nature, but there was part of me that said, you know what? I'm with a woman who survived. And as horrible as it was and as terrible as what was done there, we, as humanity, survived. We beat them. Mm-hmm. We stopped them.
Right.
They didn't
Luckily.
Get everybody. And, mm-hmm. and so even in that moment, I was like, you know what? Good overcomes evil.
There's always some positive.
So this song, What Really Matters, kind of reflects that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's hear it.
Burn, saw hurricanes churn. Things I've seen are hard to share. There's no warning, there's no reason. Lives turn upside down. Pain and suffering all around. Why it happens, who can say? The random chance of disarray. Survivors of a wicked plan. Held a mother who lost her child. Told her father he lost his own. Face the worst that people see. Roll down with the broken. Why it happens, who can say? The random chance of disarray. See it through. the suffering and all the pain, the good comes shining through. Every time we break the chain, we all see what we must do. We got to
move and deliver.
We got to
move and deliver.
Every day, every way, what really matters? What really matters to you?
Okay, we're back. So yeah, that was lovely.
Thank you so much.
So yeah, I did want to ask you, you know, on college radio, we just can do whatever we want. To what extent, on ABC7 are you able to decide what news broadcasts you're going to want to broadcast?
You know, Sarah, it's a great question. It's a collaborative effort there.
Mm-hmm.
In the morning, there are editorial meetings. I think there's even a call. I'm not part of that because I work late. But when I get in at 3, we have an editorial meeting every day at 3:30, and we discuss what we're going to do at 11. We all bring story pitches, and you know, and those come from things we happen to see someplace else, maybe in the paper, a PR pitch. Sources will call us and tip us off to things. You know, we all have those sources that will help us. So we discuss what we're going to do. And kind of hash out as a group, and then the executive producer usually makes the final decisions. But it's very much a collaborative process. I'm fortunate, having been there a while and in the role that I have, if there's a story I want to do, sure, do it. They let me. So if I just can pick stories that I'd like to do. Sometimes they assign me to stories, but you know, the reporters are doing sort of that daily turn stuff we call day of, you know, mm-hmm. day of daily air pieces. And I'm fortunate to be able to, there's something I'm interested in or curious about or someone I want to get on, they just let me do it typically.
Mm-hmm. And do you get on the road much these days?
You know, not as much as we used to. I still am out and about reporting. And in years past, we used to travel quite a bit for stories, and that gave me the opportunity to go to Auschwitz, go to Lima, Peru, go to Mexico to cover the Pope, go to every political event, the convention several times, Iowa caucuses, New Hampshire primary, South Carolina primary. You got a chance to do a lot of that over the years, which is great experience as a reporter. And it's great personally to get to see these things from those vantage points, that unique vantage point. We don't do as much of that because the industry's changed. Budgets have changed. You know, we just don't, and none of the stations do. We just don't have the resources to do as much of that as we once did. So we focus you know, very well on our local community and rely on the network to cover and other sources to cover those national, international events. That said, if there's something big, we do go.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
We do go. Yeah.
So I only have 15 more minutes to my show
that's
here.
All?
Yes, that's it. It's been great talking to you, but you need to talk to me about your upcoming concert, which is going to be on the 19th up at the Club Fox.
Oh yeah! It's going to be. We're excited about it. The Club Fox. I'm doing a co-build show with Jay Middleton, who's a terrific artist with a great band as well. And we often share some of the same great musicians. But he has a terrific band. He's got a new album out, and he's a great performer. So we're sharing the stage, doing a co-build show with the Club Fox on Friday the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
I believe at 8 o'clock. The next day, I'm in Vallejo for Shelter Inc.'s annual fundraising concert at the Empress Theater in Vallejo, which is a fabulous old venue that I'm headlining that show with the Unauthorized Rolling Stones, great tribute band in the Bay Area. Wow. So, yeah, we're going to keep busy. Looking forward to the Club Fox show down here, though.
Mm-hmm. And you were telling me about a fundraising show? Is that the one?
Oh, yeah. The Shelter Inc. show on the 19th next Saturday, I guess, is a fundraiser. But every year, Sarah, I do an annual charity concert to support underserved kids in need through a number of organizations that I'm involved with very closely. Court-appointed special advocates, which is the CASA in Rock the CASA, my event, and helps kids remove from their homes because of abuse and neglect. Friends of Camp Concord, we send underserved kids to summer camp. And in the 29 years, I think, that I've hosted a golf tournament with Dave Goldman, who founded Friends of Camp Concord, we've sent over 12,000 kids to summer camp in Tahoe, all expenses paid. Big Brothers Big Sisters and Boys and Girls Club. So these are the beneficiaries of Rock the CASA, my annual charity concert. This year it's April 27th at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek. Over the years I've had Eddie Money, who is a friend of mine, Ario Speedwagon, Cheap Trick, Melissa Etheridge, Patti LaBelle, wow, Rick Springfield, Narda Michael Walden, the 3-time Grammy winner. That was a virtual concert during the pandemic. Chuck Lavelle, good friend of mine, who's keyboardist and longtime music director of the Rolling Stones. That was a virtual event. He was phenomenal. Did it from his tree farm in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then this last cycle, we had Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. This April 27th, I have Frank D'Ambrosio of Phantom of the Opera. It's our 10th anniversary, so we're doing something big and grand with the Oakland Symphony and the the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Youth Choir. Frank will do the best of Phantom and the best of Godfather, which he was in, and then have some phenomenal singers that will join the symphony, and we'll do a tribute to Tina Turner.
Wow.
And it'll be a really 10th anniversary spectacular. So we're excited about it. You're nice to ask, but it's all to help kids.
Mm-hmm. And it's in Walnut Creek, and it's April 27th?
April 27th, which is a Saturday night. And it's Dan Ashley's Rock the CASA. You can, rockthecasa.org is the website if you want more information.
Okay. And so I want to mention again that your concert at Club Fox in Redwood City, and it's the 19th, Friday the 19th, right, next Friday. And we do have a pair of tickets to give away to that.
Oh, fantastic.
But so let me tell people who are listening now to email me. Email me at promo, P-R-O-M-O, at kzsu.stanford.edu.
Oh, wonderful. And come, please get those tickets, win those tickets, and then make sure if you come to please come up to say hi to me at the show.
Oh,
I would love to meet you if you come to the show.
Okay.
And
okay,
you come too, Sarah. We'd love to have you.
Yeah. I'd love to see it. Yeah. So I did have a news-related complaint.
Oh, okay. My complaint window is now open.
Yes. So do you remember when Macy's used to have a complaint department?
Oh, sure.
Because I always say to my friends, is this a complaint department when I want to complain about something? So is this a complaint department?
I may have to turn you over to a chatbot at this point.
Oh, so that's another question I have, because I do write letters sometimes. Usually not to ABC, though, but when you write letters to a station, does someone actually read them?
Oh, absolutely. And we do. And I will tell you, in my nearly 40 years doing this, if a viewer reaches out to me, I've always done this, I respond in kind. In other words, if they call, nobody really calls anymore.
They send emails.
I call them back. If they send an email, I email them. If they write me a letter, I write them a handwritten note back.
Oh, that's
really
nice.
So however they communicate with me, I communicate back every time. Every now and then I'm sure one falls through cracks, but people do. Sure, the station does. And we have people in the, I guess the HR department probably does it, but reads everything that comes in.
Well, that's great. Well, so this is my complaint. You know, there's been so many shows in the past, segments of your show, where you and the other anchors are talking about, you know, the problems that San Francisco is experiencing. And isn't it terrible that there's not going to be as many conventions? And what can we do to make conventions more attractive, to bring money into San Francisco? But the people who are always forgotten are us suburbanites, who we do come into San Francisco. We eat at the restaurants. We go to the theater and to the opera and concerts. And nobody really considers what we're bringing. And I know that the mayor may not care about us because we don't vote. We don't elect her, right? But we're never considered, you know, like when they decide, okay, now we're going to charge for parking on Sundays, you know, that's putting another burden on
True.
On the community members who come in. Oh, so now we can't even come in on Sundays anymore?
Which I don't think businesses like that, because that may affect the number of people who decide on Sundays to come in.
Well, that's right.
You know, I think it's a fair point, Tara. You know, we cover that actually more than you might think. Not so much around the APEC conventions, but just in general, in terms of the business climate. And we often say, if you live, work, or visit San Francisco, these issues are important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, if you live here or work here every day, you have a daily interest in what's going on in the city. But for those of us, I don't live in the city, I work in the city, who come in to work or for fun, like you say, to go to the opera, go see a show, or come to a nice restaurant, or whatever it is. These issues, car break-ins, you know, homeless problems, the drug problem, all of these issues affect you as well. We do try to tap into that because we and report on it, because we recognize that that's how the wider Bay Area cares specifically about what's happening in San Francisco.
Right.
Same thing in Oakland. We do the same. A lot of people go to Oakland. I'm in Oakland a lot.
And, yeah, I am too.
You know,
I am too.
And you know, you care about those issues when you come and you want to park your car and you want to know it's safe and you're safe and that the businesses that you've gone to for years can stay open because there's enough of a business climate and a customer base to maintain and support what they're doing.
Yeah, because it doesn't sound a lot of times like they care about the money that's brought in from the people who maybe don't work there and don't live there, but do live in the suburbs and come in for the cultural.
You know, I think they do care, but of course the big ticket items are those conventions.
Well,
and business
that
climate
brings
and
in a lot
all
more
the
money.
Workers that come in every day. That's why they're so concerned, of course, about work from home, because so many people aren't coming to the city filling these office buildings, which means they're not filling the restaurants, the cafes, the coffee shops, or the stores to do some shopping. I think they probably, I don't want to say care more, but I think they certainly focus on that.
Well, they do, yeah.
But you're quite right. People who come in once every 3 weeks just to get a meal, they matter too. And they and any business owner, small business owner, will tell you, oh, no, we care about those people.
Well, and it used to be that I would come in a few times a week to the city.
Really?
To, yeah. Because I was ushering at the Fillmore and things that.
Okay.
I would come in a lot more often than I do now.
And
the traffic, well, the traffic is a big, and now, you know, it used to be that you could leave before, you could leave at 2 and not have the carpool lane.
Right.
Well, now it's all day long. And if I want to drive up to Oakland, not only is it all day long, but if I want to go into that lane, it's $14 to get up to Oakland. It's just a little ridiculous.
You know, that's, I was very concerned when they upped that cost because that affects people, you know, really affects working folks. You know, who that's a big ask to cough up that amount of money. And I think that, you know, teachers, contractors, you know, day laborers, you know, young professionals who aren't making a lot of money, you know, that's a big burden. And even people who are making a good living, it's still a lot of money, but it really hits a certain group of the population hardest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That was my complaint.
That wasn't so bad.
Well, I can come up with more.
Well, we're look out of time.
Well, yeah, we're out of time. Yeah, it's only 5 more minutes. So, thank you so much for coming, and come anytime, you know.
Sarah, you were delightful. It is fun to be on radio always, and you're so kind to have me on. I really appreciate it. I'll come back anytime you'll have.
Yeah, okay. Okay. So, should we play another song from
you want to go out with something?
Let's go out with something.
Why don't we go out with a song I wrote about, this kind of ties into news, the first track, which is River City, which reflects kind of the tension and challenges that the country sometimes seems to be facing, particularly these days, the angst, but it also has a positive message that we're all in it together and we'll get through it. It's called River City.
Okay, great. Hang on a second.
Thanks, Sarah, for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming. And I have to mention that after me, the very important Sticky here, Strum Pick and Thrash, DJ Joshua.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, it's a great show. Coming on from 2 to 3, and I do believe he's going to be live here in the studio, so I'm going to have to exit pretty quickly. So thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in those tickets to see Dan Ashley and his great band on the 19th up the Club Fox in Redwood City, you can email promo, P-R-O-M-O, at kzsu.stanford.edu to be rewarded with tickets. And
hope to see you there. Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah.
She is a legend.
Whoops.
There's trouble in River City, trouble for miles around. Got lost on the way to glory, and trouble is what we found. Slick men in slick suits are yelling on the tube. Young mothers scrambling to get the kids off to school. She changes channels and things to herself. It's too much screaming and fighting when there's work to do. What we found.